I wanted today just to share with you my life and why Jesus is real to me. And I want to share those things because, you know, a lot of times we read the Bible and we see those stories and, you know, it doesn't hit home as when you see how God moves in somebody else's life and you see Him actually moving today and even at that when you read stories like on Wednesday nights when we were studying the Exodus and you see all these great miracles that God did and then you see what the Israelites did afterwards and how they turned their back and how they fussed and they moaned at God. And, you know, and you're thinking, how can you do that? Look what He just did. But we do it in our lives when we have very intimate things that only God could have done in our lives. Paul compares us to warriors in our Christian walk as warfare. I like to refer it to as the fog of war that Satan puts over us in our battle, and we get caught up in it and we forget the things that God's done for us and we're only looking at what's going on at the moment. So today I just wanted to share, I guess, part of my testimony with everyone. When I was growing up, I lived in a little town called Quick, and it was a great little town to grow up in. And I hadn't given really much thought to being a Christian or, you know, about God or anything. My mom and dad, they got saved when I was about 13. And they kept trying to get me to go to church, but I really wasn't interested in it. But I saw changes in my mom and dad, and I saw a lot of changes in my mom that really made an impact on me. She was, I know none of y'all have ever met my mom, but she was one to hold grudges, and if you crossed her, you know, she was going to remember it from now to doomsday. And she would hold it against you all the way through. She had a very rough childhood, and her dad would get drunk and just beat them because he was drunk and he felt like beating somebody. So she had a lot of anger, hate, and resentment toward her dad. But when she became a Christian, I saw that slowly change. And growing up, she did not want any part to do with her dad. She wouldn't go, you know, she wouldn't go see him. She wouldn't talk to him. She just pretty much had wrote him off. And after my mom and dad became Christians, my dad kind of pushed her a little bit, you know, to start visiting. So finally, I started visiting, but as God was changing my mom's heart, her heart was changing towards her dad, and eventually the man that she hated with a deep dark passion that we heard about quite often growing up, she found out that he had cancer, and she. Basically, stayed with him almost every weekend up until he died. And was probably one of the reasons that he finally gave his heart to the Lord before he died. But seeing that change in her was really profound because I knew how much she hated her dad, but it changed. So when I was 18, you know, I really wasn't into anything bad, but you know, looking back now, I could see where I was headed that way. But I had a friend of mine who was about a year and a half older than me. He had got saved, and he was really a wild child growing up. And I saw the same profound change in him. And he actually got called to preach, and I knew how what he was when we used to hang out together, and when he would party and stuff like that. So so it was kind of odd for me, to know that he was preaching, but that was all right. That was all right. Well, on the weekends, all us kids, or as teenagers, we would go down. It was the old elementary school bottom. It wasn't an elementary school anymore. It was now a community center. But we would all go and play football on the weekends, and sometimes during the week. And he started coming down and playing with us. Knowing what he was and how he talked, and then how he was talking, that he wasn't cussing and he wasn't carrying on, but he was still having fun, and he was having fun with us. Well, he was actually preaching his first revival out in a little town near Quick called Dutch Ridge, and he kept inviting us to go. So me and a few people, we thought, well, he's been down here playing football with us. We kind of owe it to him, that we probably ought to go one night. So on November the 6th, 1978, on a Monday night, we all decided, well, we'll go this one night. As he was teaching, or preaching, he was preaching on the David and Goliath, which to this day is probably, I don't care who's teaching it, it's my favorite thing to stop and listen to. So I don't care who's teaching it. And at the end of it, he gave an altar call, and I don't even remember, the next thing I knew, I was sitting in the back, and the next thing I knew, I was at the altar crying my eyes out. And so that was when I gave my heart to Jesus then. And I began to try to follow and let Jesus teach me. And as it would have it, my friend's name was Jeff. We became close friends again, and I kind of learned under him, because he had had quite a background, and in the background, I was exposed to a lot of Pentecostal and apostolic, so I saw how God can move, and I saw how people can abuse those moves of God to bring attention to themselves and to try to show how spiritual they were. So I got in God's Word and began to try to study and learn, and what's right and what's not right. And God showed me how, yes, His gifts are true and they are real and they are for us, but there's a proper way and a place that He'll use them. So, but as as I went on, as God taught me, I kept trying to get closer to Him. And so it was just a few years later, about 5 years later, our church was going to go to a friend of his church out in Sissonsville, and he wanted us to go, and I had told him that I'd go, then he, but it was on January the 13th, 1982, and the easiest way to remember that date, if you all remember when we had the big snowstorm and the airplane crashed into the Potomac River in Washington, D.C. That was the day that that happened. And I almost didn't go because of that, because I'm such a news hound. I wanted to stay and watch the news and, you know, and see, you know, and see what all happened. And because that kind of stuff always fascinates me. But I decided I'd go ahead and go anyway, since I had already promised Jeff that I'd go. And so when we were there that night, I met somebody very special for the first time. And so then it was just a few days later, Jeff's wife had kind of arranged for me and Jody to actually meet and be able to talk. And from that point on, when I didn't know that she was there, and his wife, her name was Jackie, she took me into the living room to introduce me, and as soon as I saw her, there was a voice in my ear that said, "Here she is, take care of her." And then it was love at first sight. And I've tried to take care of her ever since. But it was the first time I actually can say that I heard the voice of God, because I heard it in my ear. And it was just like someone was there in my ear and said, "There she is, take care of her." And in June of 1982, we were married. And it was 35 years ago. And I've been trying to take care of her. I know at times I don't do a very good job, but I try. Well, then one other time that I can plainly say that I heard God's voice was in December of 1985. It was on December the 3rd at 11:35 p.m. I worked for the Postal Service, and in the area that I was, you work the mail. Once it's ready, you take it to another area, but you have to weigh it into that area. So that way they track, you know, how much mail they get. And so that night at 11:35 p.m., I had the mail on the scales, and I was getting ready to weigh it in. And just as I was pushing the buttons, I was in an area, it was half lit because it was an area that they only worked on day shift. So it was half lit, there was nobody there. And there was nobody around, nobody close by at all. And just as I was getting ready to push the buttons, I felt a hand on my shoulder and a whisper that said, "Your dad's with me now. Don't worry." And it visibly shook me. And when I came back, I guess it showed, because everybody was asking me what was wrong. Well, as I got off at 1 o'clock, But by the time I was getting off work was when Jody had found out, and she was trying to call the post office, but I'd already left. This was before cell phones. And I know some of you don't know how people operated without cell phones, but this is what happens when you, if you don't have a cell phone in 1985, if they can't get a hold of you, then you have to wait till you get home before they get a hold of you. Well, when I got home, Jody told me that my dad had had a heart attack and we needed to get to the hospital. So we immediately left and got to the hospital, but he had already died. And so that morning, after we had taken care of everything at the hospital, we took my mom back home, and she was telling us that he was working, you know, was at bed and was trying to, you know, make sure the alarm clock was set and stuff when he had the heart attack. So when we got my mom home, and we was in the bedroom floor was the alarm clock laying on the floor, and it was broke where he had dropped it when he had the heart attack. But the time on the alarm clock was 11:35. So you can't tell me that wasn't God. And that's probably one of the most precious moments that I've had with him, because it was him, pure and simple, all the way through. And then one last time, I think it was about 2003, I met this crazy Sunday school teacher at the Nazarene Church in Taze Valley, and Jody and her mom had been going there a few Sundays, and I had been going. I hadn't. Things had happened. We had been going to a church, and was deeply disappointed about how some of the things worked, and basically how things were run, and things that had happened that I didn't agree with and couldn't scripturally agree with. So I pretty much was fed up with church because of it. You know, I wasn't fed up with God. I was just fed up, you know, what's the point? Why go to church? You know, when you keep, when God's not there, you know, it seems like people don't want to do what God wants to do. They want to do their own thing. But Jody and her mom had been going, and they really liked it, liked the Sunday school, and they really liked the Sunday school teacher, so they kept begging me to go. So finally I said, well, okay, I'll go. So I went, and for the first time met this bald-headed Sunday school teacher. And again, I heard God's voice in my ear, just as plain as if someone was there talking, and said, you know, here's the ministry I want you to be involved with. And from that point on, I've been involved with Doug, and learned tremendously, and I believe I've grown tremendously since then, and I can only owe it all to God, and only owe it all to Him leading me, and that's how I know that He's real. You know, He's not just the story of the God who led the Israelites out of Egypt. He's the God who you know, used Elijah to call fire down and kill all the prophets of Baal. You know, he's He's done these amazing things for me in my life and in my walk. You know, I know He's real. And so as, and I've had, and when there's anything that I know that is real, and in 2007 and 2012, I had heart attack, and I guess both times it was almost a major one, but it wasn't. I was able to get to the hospital in time before it turned into a major heart attack. Well, on April the 24th, 2013, after we left here on Wednesday night, I got home. My chest started hurting again. It was familiar pangs. After you've had a couple of heart attacks, you kind of know the difference between gas pains and heart pains. And so I told Jody, I said, I'm having chest pains. And actually, at times they were pretty intense. But when Jody knew that if I even mentioned that I was having chest pains, that it had to be pretty bad. So she called 911. And the ambulance was like 3 minutes from the house. I think it was at, where we lived in Taze Valley. We lived about 3 minutes from where Kmart was. And they were in the Kmart parking lot when they got the call. So the ambulance was at our house in about three or four minutes. And they came in and started doing their stuff, taking my blood pressure and started running an EKG and all. And the ambulance and the one paramedic, she said, your EKG looks good. Everything, you know. I said, you look all right. She said, but you know, we with your history, we probably ought to go ahead and take you to the hospital. And I said, okay. I said, I kind of figured that. And but there was two little, the two paramedics was two little girls, and they wanted to carry me out on a stretcher. And I thought, well, I'm not going to make these two, because they wasn't very big at all. And I said, well, I'm not going to make them carry me out. I can walk. So I walked out of the house and I walked into the ambulance. And so I got in and I sat down in the ambulance. And they closed the doors and we were still in our driveway. And as soon as they closed the doors and started an IV, the real pain hit, and it was it was the worst pain I've ever had in my life. I fell 20 feet and crushed my heel on my right leg or right foot, and I thought that was the worst pain because it felt like sticking my foot into a hot vat of oil. It hurt so bad. And it holds nothing to a heart attack. And the pain was it hit just like that. And the paramedic went up to the driver. She said, we probably better go. And yeah, probably ought to use the lights. And so they pulled out of the driveway, and it was probably less than 30 or 40 seconds from the time that the pain hit when they started pulling out of the driveway, I was already drenched in sweat. I mean, it looked like someone had sprayed me with a mister. I was just drenched, and the pain was incredible. And actually, because of the pain, I was hitting my fist on the side of the of the ambulance. I didn't even realize I was doing it. And when I realized I was doing it, I told the paramedic, I'm sorry, I didn't realize what I was doing. And she said, well, I don't care. As long as you don't hit the equipment, you can beat the side of this ambulance all you want to. So we got on the interstate, and she goes, I know you was wanting to go to Charleston Memorial, but we may have to get off sooner. And I looked at her, and I said, it's that bad, huh? And she just looked at me, and she goes, yeah. But the whole time, even though in all the pain that I was in, I just had a peace about me. I wasn't scared. I mean, I was in excruciating pain, but I wasn't scared. I had no anxiety. I wasn't worried, other than I was worried about, Jody and, and everything, because, as bad as the pain was, I thought, well, this is probably it. And especially the way the paramedics' demeanor changed from pretty casual to they were dead serious. And as we was going down the interstate, she said, well, they told us we was going to stop at Thomas. She said, but they told us to go ahead because there's really not going to be that much difference in time, and Memorial already has all your records, so we're going there. Well, we got there, and unbeknownst to me, David and Donna, my brother and his wife, was going to stop in and see us, but they saw the ambulance leave out of our driveway, so they were following in behind the ambulance. And when I got to Charleston Memorial, they rushed me into the emergency room, and if you're having a heart attack, Charleston Memorial is the place to be. I had probably a dozen people around me working. They were frantically working. But they did let my brother come back just to see me and talk to me for a few seconds. But as everyone was doing what they were doing, they had one doctor who was right there beside of me and was explaining to me everything that was going on, telling me I was having a heart attack, and I was going, yeah, I kind of figured that. but they had me. Now I'm kind of like Doug. I'm kind of a numbers guy, and by that I mean I know what certain numbers mean in scriptures, and sometimes God speaks to me that way. Well, when they wheeled me into the emergency room, they put me in bed 10. 10's a number of, can represent tribulation, trials. And so I was in bed 10. So they told me that they was going to rush me immediately to the cath lab where they was going to do a heart cath. So they got me up there. But in the meantime, they gave me some pain medicine, and I don't know why. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it completely killed the pain. I wasn't feeling any pain at all. And they got me into the cath lab, which was cath lab 3. 3's God's number for completion. So I was in cath lab 3, and while I was there, I felt the pain coming back, and I thought, oh, I don't want to go through this again. And the next thing that I knew, I was in a completely, it was a completely white room, and I had the feeling that I was, being floated up, and I was trying to think, well, what's going on? I wasn't scared. I was confused, but I wasn't scared. I had no anxiety. I wasn't worried about anything. I was just wanting to know what was going on. And After a few seconds, I heard little kids laughing and playing, and I thought, well, that's really weird. And then I felt myself fall like like when you jump into the pool backwards, and it felt like water rush over me. And then when I came to, I raised up and was gasping for air. And I looked at the nurse and I said, I'm sorry, because I thought I fell asleep. And I looked at her and I said, did I pass out? And she patted me on the shoulder. She said, yeah, you passed out. So anyway, they removed the clot and the nurse. And so I'm trying to think what all was going on, and I'm putting two and two together. And after while I'm laying there and they're finishing the heart cath, because they was probably three quarters of the way through when I woke up. And so when they finished, I looked over at the nurse and I said, I didn't really pass out, did I? She said, no, you didn't pass out. And the other nurse came over and she goes, did you feel it when we hit you with the defibrillator? And I said, I didn't feel a thing. And she said, yeah, we hit you several times. And so I had, so they moved me out of there into recovery. And again, I was in recovery room 3. And that was when they brought Jody and Doug and them came in. And I told them, and I had, Doug and I had, the Wednesday night before had talked about the general during World War II in the Battle of the Bulge, when he was completely surrounded by Nazis, and the Nazis asked him to surrender, and he sent the note to the Nazis that said, nuts. That's all it said. And things that had been going on in my life at the time, I looked at Doug and I said, that's what I say. That's what I say. I just say nuts. So when Doug came into the room, I looked at Doug. The first words I said to him was nuts. But anyway, they moved me from there to bed 1 in the cardiac care unit. Which one again is God. But he kept doing that all the way through. So I knew that God was with me. God was real, because he was speaking to me in a way that only I can understand. And that's with each and every one of us. He'll speak to you in a way that you understand. Just because he spoke to me that way doesn't mean he'll do the same way with you. He's personal. He knows how to speak to you. He knows what speaks to your heart. He knows what you look for. And that's how he'll speak to you. And lastly, I want to share probably the worst moment as a family that we've ever faced was the death of my oldest son, Josh. And even as when he died and we got the word, as hardened as, there's no way to explain what you felt at that time. I had no fear. I felt God right there with me. And I felt his hand on me. But we had, because Josh had no insurance or anything. And we had just bought a house, so we had, you know, use most of our savings for the house and to and for other things that had happened, trying to help the family. And so we had no money to bury him, and we didn't know what to do. And we talked with Chapman Funeral Home, and Matthew was the man that we talked to, you know, and he was so reassuring, and he was almost talking like he knew how that God was going to take care of it. And when we got the total price for everything, we thought, I don't know how we're going to do this. We got all that price that Saturday night. By Sunday afternoon, we had all the money to pay for everything. So it was, well, I always say God evidently sold one of his cattle on a hill, because we went from having nothing to we had paid for his complete funeral, and cemetery plot, and everything was completely paid for. Go ahead. That's how I know God's real. Now you can come to me with your reasoning why he's not. You can come to me with your reasons why he doesn't exist, or why he just created everything and then just sat back and just let the chips fall where they may. You can say all that, but a God who just in those few personal things that I've shared, by him doing that, he's not sitting back and just letting the world unfold right in front of him and he's going to see what happens. And a lot of people have that belief. Actually, Albert Einstein believed God created the universe, but he's basically sat back and, he was just going to watch it all unfold, and like I said, let the chips fall where they may. But just in what I shared, does that sound like a God that does that? Does it sound like a God that doesn't care, that he doesn't want to be personal? It doesn't to me. And he wants to be just personal to every one of you. He wants to meet with you all on that level. And like I said, and that's not I've attained some type of spiritual enlightenment, because I've fallen on my face I don't know how many times, even after. I can't criticize the Israelites for what they did after God sent them out of Egypt, because many times I've fallen flat on my face after all the things that I've named that he's done for me. I still mess up. And sometimes just because, I'm just a selfish human being and I want to have it my way, and if I'm not going to get it my way, I'm going to throw a fit. But he's still there. And he still wants to be just as personal. And he's just waiting. He just waits for me to, I did it again. I'm sorry, Lord. And he's waiting for each and every one of you all. He wants to write an epistle in your heart, and he wants it to be your story, and he wants it to be your your statement, your voice to those around you, to those in the world, but more importantly to you, that you, there's no way that anyone could tell you God doesn't exist. Because there's no one's going to win that argument with me. Because I don't care what encyclopedias that they show up with. They're not going to, you know. I say, well, if what you say is true, then you explain this. And, you know, when it happens over and over and over, you're not going to, you know, they're not going to explain it. They can't say, well, it just happened. Well, it just happened this time, and this time. It just happened. It just happened. But God is real, and He wants to be very personal of each and every one of your all's lives. And He wants you to be personal with Him. And He wants you to give Him that chance to be personal. And I share part of my story today just hopefully to show you that. God wants to be just as personal with you as the very best friend that you have. He wants to be that close to you. And I just pray that you let Him. And that's all I have this morning.